work was directed by two main hypotheses. The first is the double repressor hypothesis of Amdahl and Olmholtz. And two hormones figure prominently in this hypothesis. I have simplified very generalized traces of both of these hormones, juvenile hormone in orange and vitellogenin in green. Juvenile hormone is a systematic hormone that's very important during development as well as in adult life in the regulation of behavior and life history. Vitellogenin is a yolk precursor protein that's been shown to have various functions in the worker honeybees, from potential function as an antioxidant to possible hormone regulation of behavior and development. In the double repressor hypothesis, vitellogenin acts as an internal repressor on the release of foraging behavior through inhibition of the latter regulatory central nervous system, the site of juvenile hormone synthesis. So early in life, vitellogenin titers are high, and as they begin to fall at the onset of foraging, that inhibition is released, juvenile hormone synthesis can kick up, and the resulting high juvenile hormone titers result in even lower titers of vitellogenin, and this feedback loop ensures the release of foraging behavior. At the onset of foraging, worker bees tend to specialize in either pollen or nectar collection. The reproductive grand plan hypothesis of Page and Amdahl posits that a reproductive regulatory network that includes this hormonal signaling is the mechanism that underlies worker division of labor, especially as it directs the bees into pollen versus nectar foraging through sensory tuning. This hypothesis is based on the reproductive cycle of a solitary insect, such as the simplified mosquito ovarian cycle. Here, pollen foragers represent the reproductive phenotype. They have larger, they tend to have larger, more vitellogenic ovaries, and then enhanced sensory tuning. Nectar foragers, on the other hand, represent the non-reproductive phenotype. Much of the work that went into the formation of this hypothesis came from two strains of bees that were disruptively selected for colony levels of pollen hoarding by Page and Fondrick. Bees of the high strain have huge colony stores of pollen. They also tend to have large activated ovaries. They have high titers of vitellogenin at emergence and post-emergence. They also have an earlier onset of foraging, and we've hypothesized that they have enhanced insulin signaling. Bees of the low strain tend to have the opposite traits, and like the nectar workers, represent the non-reproductive phenotype. We know that insulin signaling is very important in the regulation of life history of solitary insects, and the presence of components of the insulin signaling pathway in quantitative trait loci generated from the high and low strain bees suggests that the insulin signaling cascade could also be very important in the regulation of honeybee worker life history. We've been able to demonstrate a link between vitellogenin and behavior in life history through use of RNA interference. By injecting newly emerged bees with double-stranded RNA for vitellogenin into their abdomen, we've been able to efficiently knock down levels of vitellogenin expression. In the wild-type bees, we see that vitellogenin knockdown results in increased titers of juvenile hormone, an earlier onset of foraging, and an increased preference for nectar collection, as well as a decreased lifespan. We've also been able to demonstrate a differential response to vitellogenin knockdown in the high and low strain bees. When we looked at our three treatment groups, here we have vitellogenin knockdown in red, an injected control group in gray, and a non-injected reference group in black. Our expectations were confirmed. We predicted based on results by Amdahl and colleagues that found that high-strain bees respond to vitellogenin knockdown with an increase in juvenile hormone titer, but that low-strain bees don't respond. So we predicted we would see behavioral effects in the high-strain, but not in the low-strain. In the first panel, our results for the age of onset of foraging in the low-strain bees show no effective treatment. However, in the high-strain bees, we did see that vitellogenin knockdowns forage significantly earlier than injected controls. Again, our expectations were confirmed when we looked at foraging preference, here measured in nectar load weight in grams. In the low-strain bees in the first panel, we see no effective treatment. However, in the high-strain bees, we see that vitellogenin knockdowns collect significantly heavier nectar loads than did injected control bees. An interesting and unexpected result came when we looked at lifespan data. In our low-strain bees, we actually see that vitellogenin knockdowns are long-lived relative to injected control bees. In the high-strain bees, we don't see any effective treatment. And this is really interesting not only because our effect was in the low-strain bees, which up until this point we've only seen an effect of VG knockdown on vitellogenin expression itself, but also because the result was in the opposite direction of what we saw in wild-type bees. We found these really unexpected results, and our next step was to investigate the mechanisms that might underlie this. And because we know that insulin signaling is related to both lifespan and reproduction in some solitary insects, this seemed like a good way to go since it fits so well into the context of the reproductive ground plan hypothesis. Coupled with the presence of several components of this pathway in QTLs developed from the QTL regions developed from the high and low strains, made this connection really an interesting target. So our next step was to investigate the connection between vitellogenin and insulin signaling in the high and low strain bees. To do this, we injected newly emerged bees with double-stranded RNA for vitellogenin or nuclease-free water. We placed our treatment bees in one half of a cage, like this one, and divided them by a mesh screen from a group of nurse bees to provide a semblance of a social environment while we aged them in an incubator before collection and analysis. Our first step was to measure the effectiveness of our knockdown. We did this by using RNA or reverse transcriptase real-time PCR. We see, as expected, the high-strain control bees. Control bees will be in the solid panels and VG knockdown in the hatched panels. We see that, as expected, high-strain control bees had lower titers or lower expression of vitellogenin than did low-strain bees. We also see that our knockdown was very effective in that both high and low strain vitellogenin knockdowns had significantly lower levels of VG relative gene expression than the control bees. When we looked at insulin-like peptide 1 relative gene expression, we saw no effect of treatment or strain, although our sample sizes were relatively small with large variance, which may be masking any effect that we might see in a larger study that we have currently underway. When we looked at insulin-like peptide 2 relative gene expression, we did see a difference in both strain and treatment in the low-strain bees. Low-strain bees had significantly higher levels of insulin-like peptide 2 relative gene expression than high-strain controls. In the high-strain, we see no effect of treatment on insulin-like peptide 2 expression. But in low-strain bees, we see that VG knockdowns have significantly lower expression of insulin-like peptide 2. These results allowed us to confirm a connection, at least in the low-strain bees, between vitellogenin and insulin-like signaling. So we have results from two studies, the first of which confirmed a relationship between vitellogenin and behavior and life history. And in our low-strain bees, we see that vitellogenin knockdown results in an extended lifespan in low-strain bees. In our second study, we were able to show that the low-strain bees with reduced vitellogenin expression also have reduced expression of insulin-like peptide 2. And this is interesting because a single reproductively linked characteristic, vitellogenin expression, resulted in a difference in behavior and life history as well as a difference in expression of an insulin-signaling peptide. So this is interesting because we know from solitary insects that insulin signaling is connected to both reproduction and life history. So our next step is to directly measure the connection in honeybees between behavior and life history and insulin signaling. Several members of both the Page and Amdahl labs contributed a lot to this study, as well as many members of the Social Insect Research Group at Arizona State University. Thanks. Right, we see a faster onset of foraging and an earlier death, which is typically coupled with the earlier onset of foraging, so yes. Yeah.